Thank you for downloading this edition of Cook the Perfect. For more information, go to the Woman's Hour website at bbc.co.uk/radio4.
Now, I don't want to go on about the cold, but it was a bit of a shock to come out at 6:30 this morning and feel the really bitter first chill of winter. So it's time for stews and other forms of comfort food that will fill you up and keep the cold at bay. The chef, Allegra McEverty, is the author of Big Table, Busy Kitchen, and she's going to cook the perfect pork chop. Allegra, why did you decide to cook a pork chop?
Well, I love pigs. I'm a porcine person, and I just thought also it's this new book. It's all about skills for life. You know, it's a life book, and actually, that's something that people really need to know is how to cook things perfectly. So I thought I'd start with a pork chop and take it from there.
So how do you?
Rather noisy bit of foil going.
Yes, the foil's coming off. But I'm glad you covered it up because it means the food is all very nice and clean. So how do you start cooking this dish?
Well, so the dish itself, so it's a pork chop, and it's backed up with some lentils, some pears that are then made sticky with some stem ginger. So that's it, porky, lentily pears.
And what about the lentils? How do you cook them? They cook relatively quickly, but not red ones, is that right?
Well, yeah, red lentils are difficult because basically they don't cook, and then suddenly they go poof and just kind of collapse on you. Whereas if you've got a pui or a brown lentil or a green lentil or something like that, then it starts to, you know, basically just... I mean, they're not difficult. They're the only pulse you don't have to soak, which is good. So you just put them in a pan, cover with some water or some stock, and then just bring them up to a boil with a lid because that's more environmental in terms of using less energy. And once they're simmering, take the lid off and let them go for about 25 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that. My lentils are already cooked. I did them this morning.
Yes, good, because they would have taken
most of the show.
So you've just popped the pears into the frying pan.
I've got two pans on the stove that I got pre-warm. One of them's got some butter, and I'm just chucking the pears in once it's at the sizzle stage. And then once that's up and running, I'm going to get the... I love this stove. I cooked fuel on this one last Christmas, I remember.
You did.
One of them's OK, and the other one's a bit dodgy. So I put the pears on the dodgy...
Don't put the meat on the dodgy one, OK?
Exactly. I've got the pears going on the dodgy side, so they can just kind of caramelise away in some butter. And then I've got a pork chop here, and this is a lovely, lovely pork chop. It's about, as you can see, quite nice and thick. That'd be one of my good tips about getting a good pork chop. Quite nice and thick. I'm going to hope there's a bit of heat going on in that pan. A little bit of oil. It's good to let the meat come up to not necessarily room temperature for pork, like you would for a steak, a beef steak. But you do want it. You want to take the chill off it because it'll just take longer to cook. And a bit of salt. Good seasoning on both sides.
And you put that on before you put it into the fat.
Yeah, so you want to season it on both sides. Well, actually, you want to season it on one side well and thoroughly, S&P. And then once you slapped it in the pan, so you see all my oil there is smoking, which is always joyful in a radio studio. So once the oil is smoking...
It means the oven is hot enough.
It does. It means the pan's good and hot, which you need, because you need the fat to get the nice golden bits on it. You need the meat to get a little bit of caramelisation on it, and that's what makes good flavour. So you want it to be smoking like that. And then you lay it in. We're hoping for a good sizzle.
Good sizzle.
That'll do. I'll buy that today. And then once it's in the pan, then you can season the other side. It makes it easier to do it that way than to do it both sides at the beginning.
Could you grill it rather than fry it?
Yeah, you could grill it, of course. Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between grilling and griddling. So grilling, you mean under a grill. You could, but what you're going to miss there is that impact of meat to heat. Which is actually what gives it part of the good flavour. I mean, it'll be a sort of more slow absorption of heat, and you won't get the nice caramelisation, the crispy fat. Love a bit of crispy fat.
And if you griddled it?
And if you griddled it, then you would get that, and you get the lines as well. And some of the fat would run away in the grooves. So, I mean, if I was doing this at home, I could griddle it, and I would pan it. I wouldn't stick it under the grill myself.
How long on each side?
Well, you want to get it... I mean, so this was a good thick pork chop, wasn't it? About 4 to 5 centimetres over there. And you want to give it a good colourisation first, then turn it down a couple of notches. So probably about five minutes aside, 5-6. We're going to poke it later and see.
OK, well, we'll let it sizzle away for a little while. Do turn it over when it needs turning over and don't burn the pears. This book was, I know, inspired by one that your mum handed down to you. What's the story behind that book?
Well, so when we were little, my mum had, and I loved, you know, I spent a lot of time in the kitchen with my mum, and, you know, we had lots of books on the shelves because she was a very good cook, you know, things like Robert Carrier, Claudia Roden, Elizabeth David. But there was this one orange photo album, which was her collection of recipes, and it was split into chapters like, you know, hot souffles and hors d'oeuvres and sort of wonderfully 70s sounding chapters. And it was the most used one, and lots of pudding chapters towards the end because that was her forte. And it was the most used book, the most reached for book on the shelf. Very sadly, she died when I was 17. So she didn't have time to hand it down to me, but I just sort of absorbed it because I loved it so much. And I was, after my sister and I was the keener cook. And then I became a chef, and actually this book became really important to me. And every time I moved flat, and it was sort of one of the most important things that I had. And actually, you know, when someone dies, you don't have very many things that are really, really important of theirs left, I find. And this book really became something very, very important about my mum, a connection. It was her cookbook. I was then a chef. It was a sort of tie between us, a physical, you know, tie still on this planet. And then when I was writing one of my books, I took it into my publisher because it had a very homely feel, and I wanted something of that in the book. So I took it into a design meeting, and the designer happened to be sick that day. And my lovely editor said, "Look, I'll put it somewhere safe. I'll show it to him tomorrow, and I'll bike it back to you tomorrow." And I said, "Okay, but just do understand that if my house was on fire, this would probably be the first thing that I grab." And she said, "I get it."
And they lost it.
The next day, I was standing on the corner, and I got a phone call in Shepherd's Bush, and I was standing on the corner, and she said, "Edgar, I'm so sorry, it's gone. It's halfway up the Thames on a barge heading for landfill. The cleaners came in the night, and they thought it was rubbish." Oh, now, shocker story.
Now, but you say of this book, it's all about Delilah. Now, that's your daughter.
It is, my small one, yeah.
So you're trying to do what your mum did for you.
So basically, yeah, so this has always made me very cross, the loss of this book, because actually, I mean, obviously it made me sad as well, but it's also made me cross, because, you know, grief has got lots of the... There's quite a lot of anger in grief, isn't there? And it's always made me cross that this lady, this lovely lady, lost it, because it actually wasn't hers to lose. It was mine, it was my sister's, it was our family book, and it wasn't hers to lose. So one night, when my little girl was 18 months old and crying in the middle of the night, and I gave a picture of her cot, gave her a cuddle, she went to sleep, and I found myself thinking about my mum's cookbook. And I thought, instead of just being cross for the rest of my life, I'm going to do something about this. So this book, Big Table, Busy Kitchen, is my collection of recipes for Delilah for life. And the best way to not have one is to get it published.
So she will definitely inherit it.
Oh well, she can go and buy it on eBay in 20 years' time if she loses her copy.
How are you managing, though, being a lone parent? Because you were in a civil partnership when you had her. Now you're on your own and incredibly busy.
Well, yes, I mean, I do get support from my, you know, we don't co-parent. Delilah lives with me, but Susie, my lovely ex-wife, you know, she has her for every other weekend. She helps financially. But it is Delilah and I, you know, most of the time. And there's, you know, there's strength to that as well. You know, I'm becoming a mum was the best thing I ever did.
I'm now going to leave you cooking that. We're going to have the cereal and then I'm going to eat some. OK. And you can hear episode 4. Tomorrow, I've already got a mouth full of pork chop and pear and ginger and lentils. This is really, really good and unusual, combining those things. How did you make sure that it was perfectly cooked?
So the trick is, what you do is you insert something small and thin, like a skewer or a thin knife, into the bit right by the bone, which will be the last bit to cook. Hold it there for 5 seconds, take it out, put it to your lip, gingerly, as it were, and you want it to be just warm for a pork chop, because then by the time it's had a 5-minute rest, it'll be perfectly... I mean, that does look pretty spot on to me.
It is absolutely spot on.
We call it McKevitie's lip assessment.
It's so good, Allegra. You know, just going back to the book, there are different chapters. There's broken board, there's new worker, there's impressing the pants off. Why did you organise it in that way?
Well, cause it's a book, you know, written for Delilah's life. I thought, you know, I didn't want to do soup salads, you know, so I structured it like her life. So it starts with, begins with baking, which is what we're doing now as a 3-year-old. Broken board's about student years. New work is from the new work. It's a good, simple, quick dinner for when you get home. Impressing the pants off, obviously, for when she's seducing her first love. The whole point is that it's a recipe, just in case something happens to me, like happened to my mum, and I'm prematurely off this planet, she's set. So it goes all the way through to, you know, when she she's pregnant and bun in the oven and family favourites.
I have to tell you about some of the tweets and emails we've had. Diane says, God, that story about the cookbook, I'm so cross on her behalf. Someone else says, this is Natalie, says, brought a tear to my eye hearing about Allegra's lost cookbook. And Janie Orr says that she has a book that her mother gave to her. She died in my early 20s, and I would also save this book over anything. A link that's real and living. I'm so sorry, Allegra. I wept buckets. Thank you.
Thank you for being so sympathetic.
Bye-bye.
You can download any edition of Cook the Perfect by going to the Woman's Hour website at bbc.co.uk/radio4.